It please the court, Laura Paul representing Mr. Molinero Jimenez.
That's an iPad that you have there.
It is. It is.
This is for Judge Abbott's.
Very useful.
It's like giving a wristwatch to a fish for me.
Well, it takes some getting used to. Mr. Molinero is appealing the sentence in this case because the guidelines do not but should reflect a material difference between the mere possession and actual use of a weapon in a prison. Mr. Molinero is a Mexican national who was brought up in abject poverty. He had none of the formal education that we just assume for people in poverty, even in this country. He pled guilty to this offense, and he told everyone that he spoke to about it that he possessed this 6-inch piece of metal with a piece of cloth wrapped around it in the event that he needed it to defend himself, and that he had been attacked before and been seriously injured, and he was fearful of being attacked again. He told this to the guard who found it on him. He told this to the disciplinary hearing officer. He told the FBI agent this. He told me this. And he told Judge Lawrence this in the district court at sentencing. The guidelines are inconsistent about this issue of whether or not there's a difference between possession and use. In Guideline 2A2.3, which is the minor assault guideline, the base offense level is 7, and that assumes that the weapon, that there was a weapon and that it was either used or threatened to be used. If there wasn't...
Suppose he used this thing and stabbed somebody with it, the sentence would be substantially more than he got here.
Well, that's true, Your Honor, because that would probably fall under the aggravated assault. But had he used this piece of metal to threaten someone, the minor assault guideline would have been much lower. It would have only been a 7. And here it was 13 under 2A2.3. If he had brandished it, it would have been lower. And that is an inconsistency that I think contradicts the policy of the guidelines that sentences should be proportional and that judges need to consider the offense conduct for the individual in each case and not just presume that the guidelines are reasonable. The aggravated assault guideline 2A2.2 begins at level 14 and then goes up various levels for different kinds of use or threatened use of a weapon. For example, if a firearm was discharged, it increases by 5. If a dangerous weapon, including the firearm, was otherwise used, it increases by 4. If a dangerous weapon was brandished or threatened, it increases by 3. But the guideline that we're dealing with here, 2P1.2, I believe, does not make that distinction, another inconsistency. The extortion guideline, 2B3.2, likewise makes a similar distinction between possession and actual use or threatened use. In subsection 3 of 2B3.2, there are 7, 6, 5, and 4, and 3 level increases for various aspects of weapon use, 3 levels if a dangerous...
With your argument, Ms. Paul, is I don't understand why this would have to be addressed under the guidelines, why this is not something that the sentencing judge considers under 3553A1, the nature and circumstances of the offense.
I think that it should be considered under 3553A1 because...
It gives the judge great discretion,
yes,
in evaluating a mere possession as opposed to a brandish.
That's correct. But here I think because the guidelines don't address it, it was disregarded by Judge Lawrence. And in fact, on page 9 of the transcript, he says that he has to evaluate Mr. Molinero's participation in the offense. But the only thing that the district judge, ever discussed in the sentencing hearing was the fact that he possessed it. He didn't, and he disregarded the argument that there should be a difference, while also acknowledging that there was a disparity in the guidelines about this issue as compared to other guidelines.
What was his criminal history category?
It was 6, Your Honor.
It'd have been more if it had to keep graduating up. Sixes, he couldn't get any more, but he had 19 prior convictions. And
that's correct. They were.
How many points did he have? It only takes 13 to get to a six, I think.
He had over 13. I don't recall the exact number, but he did have over 13. Certainly that was problematic for him.
Yeah, I guess so.
The government argued at the sentencing hearing and in its brief that something else would have been charged had he used the weapon or hurt someone with it. But again, the minor assault guideline is lower than the one that he was actually charged with. So if he had used it, it's possible that he would have been charged with something lesser and gotten less time. And that is a contradiction and a disparity that I don't think...
Well, that's possible, I guess, but it hasn't happened here. I mean, do we have to examine all these other guidelines to see whether it all fits together properly?
Well, I think the benefit of examining the other guidelines is to see that there is a distinction.
It's a very dangerous thing for an inmate in a prison to have a weapon, period.
Indeed it is.
Whether it does anything with it or not is another story, but it's hard to diminish the significance of this, what he's been apprehended at, it seems to me.
Well, I'm not suggesting...
If I was a guard in a prison, I wouldn't want all the prisoners running around with cane.
Well, no, and certainly the government has an interest in deterring that, but there should also be some consideration given for the fact that he didn't actually use it. He only possessed it. And there was history that was undisputed by the district court that he had reason to be fearful of being attacked again. It didn't rise to the level of a defense here because there was no immediate threat. But that's where this defendant was when he possessed.
Would that ever be a defense to possession of contraband?
I think that it would be. If I remember researching that. I don't recall off the top of my head at this time, but I think that it would be.
Anything else?
If there was an immediate threat. No, thank you.
Ms. Paul? Mr. Warden.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is James Warden. I represent the government here today, as I did before the district court.
These cases never go to trial, do they?
As I think Your Honor knows, in fact, in front of Judge Lawrence just a couple of months ago, I did have to try.
Is that right?
As we call it, a shank case.
What would the defense to this be?
The defense in that case, Your Honor, was that the item was not a weapon. The defendant was a cobbler, and his defense was that he had an item that was his owl, his cobbler's tool, and so it didn't fit the definition.
Could a fear of assault ever be a defense to possession of contraband?
The case law, as I understand it, Your Honor, and it's been raised in some cases I've prosecuted, is that you have to show essentially an imminent threat of a life-threatening nature that could be resolved by no other alternative, the emergency type defense.
Oh, sorry for distracting you.
That was certainly not the issue here. I'll say, somewhat in response to your question, the story that Mr. Molinaro Jimenez gave, that I'm possessing this shank to defend myself, is the story that the government hears in virtually every prosecution of shank possession cases that it undertakes. The focal point of the argument by the appellant here is that the guidelines makes no distinction between mere possession of the contraband weapon and the use of it. And it's an accurate argument in that the appellant's correct that it makes no distinction. But the fallacy in the argument is the presumption that there should be a distinction. There isn't on purpose. The Guidelines Commission has not failed to understand the significance of that other conduct, that is, an assault, a battery. And then that's addressed in other guidelines. That's addressed in the 2A section of Guidelines of Assault. The Commission recognized, and Judge Lawrence goes into great detail in his findings, and I'll come back to that in response to Judge Tender's comment about 3553A. But the government argued, and Judge Lawrence found, that the significance in the 2P1.2 guideline is the elements that don't apply in the 2A1 assault cases, and that is that the defendant has to be a federal inmate and that it has to take place in a federal prison. And the nature, as Judge Cudahy said, is that, you know, the whole nature of this is we don't want inmates to carry shanks, period. And so there certainly is a higher guideline for an inmate carrying a shank in a federal penal institution than there is for Joe Blow carrying a shank on the street. And that's very valid. If the inmate assaults somebody with that weapon, then he's going to be prosecuted for the assault, and I respectfully suggest that the sentence is going to be significantly higher. To come back to the question, Judge Stinnett, that you asked of Ms. Paul, Judge Lawrence, as the record reveals, did a very detailed analysis of the 3553A factors, which is the place to address this. And he made findings that support that the sentence is reasonable under those tests as well in the guidelines. He talked about the fact that this defendant not only possessed the weapon, but he manufactured it, and that was undisputed evidence. This defendant had a significant criminal history, 19 convictions, criminal history category 6.
How many points did he have?
I think, Your Honor, it's 14. I looked at that when Your Honor asked the question.
Some of those 19 convictions had expired in terms of point counting.
Yes, Your Honor. And was serving a sentence at the time of this prosecution for illegally reentering the United States, which he had 2 prior convictions, including the current one for that. So the government's position is that all the critical 3553A factors were addressed by the court. The court carefully considered the argument that the appellant made through his counsel, did the 3553A analysis, found that this guideline was appropriate, and so the United States believes that the record should be sustained. Unless the court has any other questions?
We do not.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Ms. Paul.
I would just like to point out that the government suggested that Joe Blow carrying a shank on the street is a lesser offense than one carrying one in a prison. Indeed, I think that's true also. But the fact of the matter is the guidelines for actually using a weapon like this outside of a prison are lower. And it is not just that someone who merely possesses a weapon like this should have a higher sentence than one who actually uses it. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Paul. And I wanted to express the gratitude of the court for your acceptance of appointment in this case, both at the district court and here, and the assistance that provides to the court and the vigorous advocacy for your client. Thank you.
It's my pleasure.
Thank you to both counsel. With that, we'll take this case under advisement as well.